You are listening to a sermon by Phil Schaffrin, recorded on Sunday, April 17, 2011, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
I should say one more thing about my wife because it relates to interfaith bridge building. Linda has had mixed opportunities to talk about her Christian faith where she works, but last summer she wrote a book on losing a child at birth. This happened to us about 25 years ago, and one of the surprises to us was the inroads that that book had in her own school. She found that fellow teachers, the principal, even students were reading the book, and in that book she talks about her experience, our experience, but she also incorporates God's comfort scripture into it. And I guess one of the lessons we learned was that in interfaith bridge building, people will not deny your story, and people will be willing to listen to your personal story. When maybe you're talking about your faith in other non-personal ways, it's a harder thing to do. So we have found that to be very very surprising and very happy about that. A man once told his grandson, "There's a terrible fight going on inside of me. It's a fight between two wolves. One is evil and represents hate, anger, arrogance, intolerance, and superiority. The other wolf is good and represents joy, peace, love, tolerance, understanding, humility, kindness, empathy, generosity, and compassion." And then the grandfather said to his grandson, "This same fight is going on inside of you. It's going on inside of every person." And then the grandson said to him, "Which wolf will win?" And his grandfather simply replied, "The one that you feed." And I think when you apply this story to religious faith, we could say that each one of us has a wolf of religious tolerance or intolerance or conflict or even war, or the wolf of religious tolerance. We have the wolf of religious arrogance and superiority, or the wolf of religious understanding, humility, and bridge building. MCC finds itself working in areas of the world where conflicts are sometimes fueled by religious conflicts, such as northern Nigeria, Palestine, and Sudan, just to name a few. A few years ago, MCC decided that one of its key initiatives in its international programming would be interfaith bridge building. And three principles were identified as part of our strategy. The first principle was simply that we must communicate as clearly as possible that we start from the basis of our Christian claim that Christ is the light of the world. Interfaith bridge building always begins with faith. But claiming that all salvation comes through Jesus does not prevent us from forging alliances with those who do not share this conviction, nor should it prevent us from cultivating an ability to learn from those outside the church or outside the Christian faith. The second principle is we engage in interfaith partnerships both to accomplish tasks together and to interact with those of other faiths. MCC's history, as many of you well know, is one of working in partnership with a wide variety of groups and people, and mostly in activities of service. So it's logical that MCC approaches interfaith bridge building through service. For example, last June, before the elections in Sudan, MCC funded a 5-day conference on nonviolence and interfaith dialogue between Christians, Muslims, and intertribal leaders in Juba, southern Sudan. They sought to answer the question, "If not me, then who?" Meaning that each individual, whether you're a Christian or a Muslim or come from a tribe, must try to find ways to engage in dialogue and understanding. Sudan is largely Arab and Muslim in the north, and African and Christian in the South. Now that the South has voted to become its own nation, and that's going to happen this July when they raise the Southern Sudanese flag for the first time, the ability to dialogue with each other and to live peacefully is going to be very important for them going forward after 22 years of civil conflict. The third principle that MCC is using in interfaith bridge building is that theological conversations and Christian witness will grow from responding to human need and may at times lead to formal theological dialogue, but it will be our service that spawns that theological conversation or Christian witness. We assume that working together will teach us and our partners more about what motivates service from a faith perspective and will build bridges of understanding that can further peace. Our task is first of all to give a faithful witness to Jesus Christ, and then God himself is the source of conversion. When the Mennonites came to southern Somalia in 1954, they were able to build schools and hospitals and engage in other mission work. But after Somalia's independence in 1960, some restrictions were placed on religious freedom. And religious freedom was actually imposed upon. The first post-independence stipulation was that Islam would be the only religion allowed in Somalia, with a clause that was added later that made proselytizing illegal. So Mennonite Mission did not feel it would be greatly affected by the change. The schools it had established were well known and appreciated, and missionaries had always been low-key in their witness. But these government directives that I just mentioned, only Islam and proselytizing is illegal, it had a lasting impact when the government did two things. The government decreed that Islam had to be taught in all schools, public or private, and because of that, most Protestant missions chose to close their schools and leave the country. But Mennonite Mission, in consultation with new Somali believers and with their own board, decided to allow Islam to be taught in their schools. Quite a radical thing. But this decision proved to be groundbreaking for the relationship between Somalis and Mennonites. Still today, Somalis affirm that this was when trust was built. Somalis recognized that Mennonites had come not merely to convert them to a new religion, but out of love and with a desire to serve them. So while I was thinking about MCC's engagement in interfaith bridge building, I wondered if there was an example in Scripture where someone is attempting to do something like this. And so, hence, we have the passage in the book of Acts reading about Paul's experience as it relates to interfaith bridge building. I believe there's elements in what he does that contribute to understanding how to engage a religious viewpoint that's not our own. And I'd like to just look briefly at this passage. We've already read it, so I'm not going to read the verses again. I'll just refer to them and draw out some principles and applications. Paul is on his second missionary journey, and it included a stop in Athens, Greece, where he was waiting for Silas and Timothy to arrive from Berea. So in Paul's own interfaith dialogue, the first thing he had to deal with were his own emotions. We're told in verse 16 that he was greatly distressed, or the New American Standard said his spirit was provoked to see that the city was full of idols. He was reacting viscerally and emotionally to what he was experiencing interculturally and religiously. And it's because what he was seeing contradicted the way he thought things should be. And sometimes the first response we have to others who are unlike us either culturally or religiously is an emotional response. In places around the world where religious conflicts occur, many times it is an emotional response of violence to cultural and religious differences. Paul's response to his emotional situation, though, was that he decided to reason with the Greeks, we're told. Now, think about it. This is Paul, the former Pharisee the former zealot who used to react emotionally to religious differences to Christians and persecute them and drag them away. So something has happened to Paul's approach. Something has happened to Paul. He's moved from emotionally reacting to engaging in a reasoned way. So one of the first things in interfaith bridge building is a control of our own emotions and passions and a movement to reasoned dialogue and communication. We're told that Paul brings his emotions under control and has reasoned dialogue and communication, and he does it in three places. He does it in the synagogue with Jews and God-fearing Greeks. He does it in the marketplace, and he does it in the Areopagus. In the synagogue, it's with Jews and God-fearing Greeks. In the marketplace, it's with whoever was there. And we're told that there just so happened to be Epicureans and Stoic philosophers who disputed with him because Paul was preaching about Jesus and the resurrection. Paul would likely have been familiar with the Stoics because Tarsus, Paul's hometown, was a stronghold of Stoicism when Paul was growing up there. The Stoics were concerned with moral conduct and held that the divine reason that orders all things pervades all reality. So that was their basic approach to life. It was moral conduct, and this morality pervades all reality. And so what Paul does here in this section of Acts 17, it's his clearest instance in the book of Acts of presenting God in terms of providence, or what we would call general revelation, which was not just a Stoic idea, but a general traditional Jewish Christian understanding of God. So Paul has adopted some of his reasoning, some of his argument here to Stoic and traditional understandings of God. The Epicureans, on the other hand, led rather austere lives. They withdrew from worldly affairs to cultivate simple pleasures in the company of friends. They believed that fear of the gods and fear of divine retribution after death were the source of human unhappiness. And so they rejected these fears of the gods. They were indifferent because they said the gods were indifferent to human affairs and there was no life after death. So they were often attacked as atheists because they held that sense perception was the only basis for knowledge. So they were popularly known for their atheism, for their denial of providence, for their denial that God exists or that he controls anything in the world. And they also rejected God's justice. And so Paul, again here in Acts 17, understands the Epicureans and he is going to react to their denial of God's justice. First of all, Epicureans denied providence. They said God is neither kind nor angry. God is not moved by passion. So then, God is not a judge. He's just not involved in the world. Epicureans also affirmed the finality of death. Death is nothing to us. For the body, when it is resolved into its elements, has no feeling, and that which has no feeling is nothing to us. That's what they said. There is then no survival after death. It follows then that if God does not judge and there is no survival after death, there can be no post-death judgment. Just as a Jewish Christian view of God would say that God is a judge, we do survive death, and that there is a post-death judgment. Epicureans denied all three of these. And then the third place that Paul did his interfaith dialogue was in the Areopagus, where Paul was taken by the philosophers. And it was an invitation, not a compulsion. The Areopagus basically is the hill of Ares. Ares was the Greek god of war, and so the hill was named after the Greek god of war. And the philosophers brought Paul here because they wanted him to tell them about his new teaching. Now, in his interfaith dialogue, the other thing Paul had to do is he had to deal with what the Greeks thought of him. Not only were these Greek perceptions of him, But they were actual statements that they made to Paul about what he was teaching about the resurrection from the dead. And we've read it here. What did the Greeks think about Paul? And as we're mentioning what they thought about him, ask yourself how many of these things could be true. The first thing they said, he's a babbler. That's what the Epicureans thought. Well, we don't know. Maybe, maybe not. He's advocating foreign gods. That's what the Stoics thought. Well, true. This is a new teaching. True. He's bringing strange ideas. Maybe true. So what they have to say about him has a high degree of truth about it. But the point is, in all interfaith religious dialogue, there are going to be different perceptions and misperceptions, conceptions and misconceptions, understandings and misunderstandings. Paul proceeded with the dialogue knowing what they already thought about him. And so kind of suspending judgment, suspending what other people think about you. The next thing that Paul does in this interfaith dialogue, he finds common points of religious discussion between the Greeks and himself, as I've already mentioned, based upon God's providence. The first thing he does is he compliments them. He tells them that they are not only religious, but very religious. Some translations, like the King James, translate that as superstitious. I perceive that you're very superstitious. But Paul is not trying to alienate them. He's trying to dialogue with them. And he can make this statement because he's observed their objects of worship, particularly their altar to the unknown God. And what Paul does is he fills in the blank about their unknown God. He says that the God of Jesus may be the God that this altar is recognizing. So in interfaith bridge building, common points of discussion have to be established, and we can assume that they do exist because of our common humanity, because all human beings are created in the image of God. We usually don't start with our common points of contact when we meet other people or other cultures. We start with our differences, and it's the differences that lead to intolerance and violence. Paul also continues the common point of contact by starting from, as we said, providence, or the general revelation of God is found in creation. I won't read the verses, but we've read them. In verse 24, he presents God as creator. In verse 25, God as sustainer. In verse 26, God as ruler. And then in verse 29, God as father. And then finally, verse 31, God as judge. So he's starting from the general rather than talking about Jesus. Paul cites their own poets to support his common point of contact with them. He says in verse 28, as one of your own poets has said, in him we live and move and have our being. And he uses that to show God as a ruler. And then he says, we are his offspring in verse 29 to show God as our father, to make his point. And it's because men are made in the image of God, Paul could appeal to their sense of the divine in his dialogue with them. And from this sense of the divine, he could reason and infer that deities don't live in temples made with hands, and deities don't need anything. So this sense of divinity, this way he's arguing, it's a powerful device that enables Paul to base himself on acceptable theistic assumptions that the Greeks would have no problem accepting, while at the same time going beyond those common theistic assumptions. And this is also true in other interfaith bridge building. Jews, Muslims, Christians, and Sikh faiths are all monotheistic. They all believe in one God. There's a starting point. Now, is it the same God? That's one thing to talk about. But they are all monotheistic. Jewish, Muslim, and Christian faiths all claim Abraham as their father, and hence have an additional starting point for bridge building. But in Paul's interfaith dialogue, he emphasizes only what the audience was ready or willing or able to dialogue about. Notice what he doesn't talk about. No mention is made of Jesus' signs and wonders, which would signal his role as a prophet attested by God. And he does this earlier in the book of Acts, in Acts chapter 2. He goes into elaborate detail. In fact, little mention is made of Jesus' crucifixion and death beyond the simple note about God raising him from the dead. So it's been suggested that Paul's speech is inference rather than preaching. He's using an indirect appeal for the purpose of introducing the gospel. And the intention of being indirect or using inference was to promote curiosity and to elicit questions to have a dialogue. Paul draws the inference that if God is our Father and we are his offspring, then the divine image cannot and is not made by human hands. He says in verse 24, God does not dwell in temples made with hands. In verse 25, he is not served by human hands, as though he needed anything. In verse 29, we ought not to think that the divine nature is like gold or silver or stone, an image formed by the art and thought of man. So Paul's discussion in Acts 17 is not about Christology. It's not about Christ. It's about the nature and the attributes of God, what God himself is like. And Paul says that their failure is to understand the essence of deity, and now the failure that has been overlooked, he says the times of ignorance, is now part of God's command to repent, because God is also a judge. God is a judge who has set a day when he will judge with justice by this man Jesus, whom he's appointed, whom he raised from the dead as proof that he will judge the world. So in his interfaith dialogue, he's arguing from the nature of what God is like. And he says God's nature and attributes are not unknown, but known. God cannot be confined to an image or a temple, since he's the Lord of heaven and earth. And he cannot be served by humans, since he doesn't need anything. He's the one who gives life to everything. And the offspring of God cannot be the creators of God. So Paul is arguing for God's justice, or that God's ways are just. Here it is, God's right to judge the world because of his providential care of it. So what sets Paul's presentation of his Christian God apart from well-known Greek understandings of God is the very issue of Christian justice, the role of Jesus as a judge who will judge all people after death to render reward and punishment. So the issue from the start is God and God's providential action in the world, which includes God's justice. Paul declares God is a judge. He's fixed the day in which he's going to do this through Jesus. Human survival after death. He preaches the resurrection, which is not simply the announcement of Jesus' resurrection, but the survival of death for everyone. And then post-death retribution. It's a resurrection unto judgment. So in interfaith bridge building, there has to be an understanding on both sides of what can be discussed and what are the easier points. And here he starts with the easier points. God's providence. God is creator. He's sustainer. He's ruler. He's father. And he uses that to get to the harder points. God as judge and Jesus as Messiah. So perhaps the providence of God is a common theological theme even today that can be a bridge builder between faiths, starting with what most faiths would affirm. The last thing we're told in this passage is that interfaith bridge building most likely will have mixed results. It won't always be successful. It won't always be a failure. It'll probably be mixed. And so Luke portrays a divided reaction to Paul's speech. There's a division, a schism takes place, and some listeners respond favorably, the Stoics, while others reject it, the Epicureans. We're told in verse 32 that the Epicureans sneered at what Paul had to say. The Stoics wanted to hear him again, and a few individuals, Dionysius and a woman named Damaris, believed. This is the one and only time Paul was in Athens. This was his one shot. There's no recording of Paul ever having visited Athens again. Interfaith bridge building has risks. It can have mixed results, but it can also lead to real understanding and even conversion. I've brought several copies of an MCC newsletter that was done a few years ago. I'll leave up here if any of you would like to take a copy of it. It's on Interfaith Bridge Building, basically sharing one of the story on Somalia is in here, and then just some other discussions. So I'll leave that up here. You can also download it from MCC's website. If you go on mcc.org and search Interfaith Bridge Building, the second thing that will come up is this PDF. So thank you very much, and enjoyed being with you this morning.